black. Too strong.
I'm not a fake, fraudulent commentator on television. See, I don't act. This is real.
Are you that stuff on stupid?
His black card is under review right now.
From Washington, D.C., Roland Martin. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Thank you.
All right, then. President Barack Obama, he is, first of all, before I do that, let me thank everybody for watching ABC This Week on yesterday, where I talked about Trump being a thug in chief.
So we had to say a couple of
things there. And so we appreciate Tom also simulcasting right now on TV One as well. President Barack Obama is in Cuba today, the first president to set foot on Cuban soil in more than 80 years. It is a huge, huge deal there. But what does it actually mean? We're trying to have a thought in the relationship with Cuba, Tom. Joining us right now, a couple of folks I think are critically important, their voices. We're waiting to hear from Congressman Charlie Rangel, who is there. But in the meantime, we'll chat with Devin Spencer Benson. She's the author of the book, Anti-Racism in Cuba, The Unfinished Revolution. Also, Troy Nash is a businessman who's made more than a dozen trips to Cuba as well. Devin, are you there?
I'm here. Good morning, Roland.
Troy, are you there?
I'm here, my brother, yes.
All right, then. I want to start with you, Troy. First and foremost, you're the president who's making this visit. He's, in many cases, a tourist. He'll be speaking to the people there. How important is it, and what does it mean for black folks?
Well, I tell you, this is big, big news. I was just there most recently, past November, where I co-led a delegation with the former governor of the state of Missouri, Bob Holden. And I can tell you, having traveled many times since 2000, that this is big, big, big news. They love us over there. They love black people in Cuba. We are them, and they are us. And so I tell you, the conversations that I've had with folks on the ground, they are eager to embrace all things Americans, particularly African Americans. The opportunity to do business is great. Now, the way the laws are structured now, it's very difficult to do so, because to own anything over there, to go in business in any kind of capacity, Cubans have to own 51% of it, no matter what the industry or what the business is. And so we have a lot of work to do. But to the extent that this thing opens up, it seems to me that African Americans, given the history and the cultural ties, will have first dibs at whatever is available.
Devin, the issue of race is always at play. Afro-Cubans, also white Cubans. That is still a significant battle there in Cuba, just like we have here in America.
Very much so. I mean, I think one of the things that I'm trying to get people to think about as we talk about what's happening right now is that Cuba has its own racial politics and a long history of race relations. And in some ways, that's what I hope Obama can understand, and that as well as African-American business people, as well as anyone else who's going into Cuba, that they're working on a racial system that has had plenty of discrimination and segregation as well, and that we need to think about how is it that Afro-Cubans can be a part of this new opening between the United States and Cuba.
I want to bring in Dr. Julian Malvo, who's on the set with me here, Tom. You visited Cuba in 2013. What is the opportunity for African-Americans? There's always been this extremely interesting relationship. Fidel Castro met with Malcolm X in 1960. You have him offering to send doctors to New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. There's this extremely unique relationship there between Cuba and black folks.
Absolutely. And after the Million Man March, Fidel Castro offered with Minister Farrakhan to train African Americans to become physicians. And of course, you know that with in Venezuela, they've sent physicians there. The notion is a shared oppression. And that's the access that African Americans have. There's tremendous affinity for African American people. But at the same time, internally in Cuba, you can see the differences. There still is racism there. Racism is alive and well. But there is an affinity, and there are many opportunities, as the business brother said, because there has been no free market. When we were there, for example, Roland, you went into people's homes where they were running sort of underground restaurants. So, like gourmet food, but at somebody's house where it, you know, you're paying whatever it costs to eat, but it's not a restaurant.
Right.
And you have all those kind of things. People are looking for capital desperately. There's an environmental movement there that is very exciting that we can pick up on. People like Bob Bullard at Houston, Texas Southern, would be able to pick up on. lot of innovation and a lot of opportunity, right. But at the same time, a lot of rigidity about how change is going to happen and some fear
right.
about how after Raul Castro, what happens next?
Troy Nash, shouldn't we be very careful, though, with Americans trying to rush in and capitalize and not all of a sudden do what Americans always do, take over somebody else's country?
Yeah, let me tell you, that is a real fear. Having traveled, started back in 2000, you could go anywhere, anytime. It's actually a very, very safe country. You can walk along the Malecon and have the waves come up and get water all over. It is safe in Cuba. But there are concerns that, and I saw this past November, that the Americanization of Cuba is already taking place. In fact, we work with the tour company over there, and all the buses were taken because the infrastructure is not designed to handle the massive influx of tourists. And of course, you know how we behave when we go somewhere. Sometimes we just expect to eat all the food, take all the buses, take all the everything. Just allow. Sometimes we don't get it right. So that is a big concern.
Roland, you know, Sybil, Mary, Nikki, we visited Cuba one weekend, about three weekends ago. And here's my observation. Everywhere we, in the hotels, in the restaurants, even the restaurants that are in homes, like Ms. Malville just described, I saw nothing but white Cubans. I didn't see Afro-Cubans. The only place I would see an Afro-Cuban might be in the back, in the kitchen, working. They weren't waitresses or waiters. They, in all of the hotels, and Devin. Musicians, everybody.
Yes,
Devin,
this
talk
is
about
exactly
that,
correct. I can definitely talk about that. This is exactly correct. Some of this is based on the ways that the tourist economy has opened up. So what has happened is most people in Cuba with the 1959 revolution, they got to keep the house that they were in before. So that house was given to them for free or they pay a really low rent. If you can imagine that before the revolution, most black and brown Cubans did not live in the best neighborhoods. And they still are in those same houses that they've had for the past over 60 years. So now they've opened up the tourist economy. People are opening up bed and breakfasts. They're opening up restaurants at their home. Who still has the nice house? And who's able to receive money from Cubans who live in exile, say in Miami, to fix up that house? So if you're the Afro-Cuban, you may own your house. You've had unprecedented opportunities from the revolution, but you're still in the small apartment that your family had 50 years ago that doesn't have space for you to renovate to open up a restaurant. So, of course, you're not getting those opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Troy Nash, final comment.
Well, with the 11 million population, I can tell you that what the other guests have said is all true. But as a practical matter, you're going to have to call up on Afro-Cubans, mulattoes, and everybody on the island just to keep up.
All right, then. We certainly appreciate it. Devin Benson, author of the book Anti-Racism in Cuba, The Unfinished Revolution. Dr. Troy Nash, you can also, folks, go to his website, and that website is troynash.com. Tom Sybil J., it's a huge historic visit, and Frank, finally, a thaw in the relationship because guess what? That embargo simply did not work.
Okay. Well, we can also tell you that the reason you probably have not heard from Charlie Rangel is they got 1G. They got 1G for
not
a whole—
Not 3G or 4G.
No, one.
Still waiting for those other Gs to show up.
I know.
You're not going to hear from Charlie Rangel for a while.